National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Number 2. My name is Marvin Herzog, and my respondent is Dr. Sidney Busis. This is January the 28th, 1993. Sid, I would like to ask you, how do you view your successes and your accomplishments? Do you think that that your accomplishments are salutary? Do you think that what do you think is your most significant accomplishment in medicine, of course?
In medicine?
Yes.
Well, I was going to say my most significant accomplishment is marrying Sylvia and having four wonderful boys.
I was afraid you'd say that.
That's my most significant. Medicine secondary. I've always felt family comes first. In medicine, you know, like everything else, I think I've done okay in medicine. Sometimes I think that maybe I'd have been better off going into more academics, you know, than I did.
Teaching.
Well, I've done a lot of teaching, you know. I think I mentioned this before, I think. I hold the rank of clinical professor, which means I'm a volunteer faculty member. I think my biggest success in medicine, I would say, is the satisfaction of helping people, operating in somebody's ear and they can hear, that sort of thing. I've done some writing. I've written maybe 35 or 40 different articles. I'm writing 2 book chapters now, so I have been in print a little bit. I haven't been driven to print like the full-time academicians. The saying there is either publish or perish. I haven't felt that pressure. But I think that my greatest satisfaction has been able to help people. And I've enjoyed my work. I obviously wouldn't still be doing it if I didn't.
You have a great reputation in the community, not only in the Jewish community, but in the community at large.
Well, I would contest that, but that's it.
Well, you may not be aware of it.
I'm not.
But those of us who hear about you are very much aware of it. Not only that, but you're very well liked as well, personally. Do you think that those were influencing factors in the success of your practice, or do you think it might be in reverse? Do you think that it could be that the practice has also brought on friendships and associations?
Well, I think it has, no question, because frequently when I'm out and you meet somebody, he'll be real friendly and say, oh, you took care of my mother, you put tubes in my kid's ear. So I think that when there's a successful relationship with a patient, I think that does breed friendships. I guess personality has a lot to do with it, too. I've tried to be a pleasant personality. You know, some people are just sort of born mean and nasty, and that's the problem.
If you were to look back at your life, you may have answered this question partially a moment ago. Would you have done things a little bit differently? Would you have gone to another city? Would you have, would you perhaps have preferred to work in a hospital setting?
No, I don't think so. No. That I'm sure of. Yeah. I've been independent enough to know that I always wanted to be my own boss. I started out in practice with my uncle, and you would think that'd be a very amicable relationship, and it was to a certain extent, but yet when I came on with him, the first thing he did was an offer of a 6-week vacation, and I was like, you know, excited about what I was going to do. And once he joined me, or I joined him, I took all the night calls and weekend calls and so forth, and I decided I really wanted to be my own boss. And I've always felt a strong pull to community, and I felt that if I, like this weekend, for example, I'm going to a board institute of the Council of Jewish Federations, I don't want to have to ask anybody if I can go. I always felt that I wanted to be my own boss, and that's worked out really well. I've seen other circumstances where people haven't been and they're basically unhappy and causes even physical problems when you're unhappy. And I think I can honestly say I've been happy in my practice. And one of the reasons I would say it is that I've been my own boss. Now, whether I would have done things differently, given I'm my own boss, I guess I would have done some things differently. One thing I regret really is that I didn't stop to take time to finish certain things I was doing. And I would move on to another project. I think if I had to do over again, I'd try to discipline myself a little bit more. I consider myself very disciplined. But on the other hand, for example, over the past number of years, I did a lot of guest lecturing, being invited to lecture in Chicago, Nashville, Roanoke, Virginia, or something like that. And I lectured all over. And and I would spend hours preparing lectures. And if I disciplined myself one more step to take the time to put that in manuscript form for publication, I would have a huge publication. But I didn't take the time to do that because I'd move on to the next project. So that's one thing I think I would change. I try to tell my son that now, for example. Now, see, as I said earlier, that's not so important in private practice. If I were in full-time academic medicine, that would be disastrous because you have to get to whether it's worthwhile or not. It has to be in practice. I might say a lot of stuff in print isn't worth a nickel, but they have to get it in print. So that's one thing I would change. I think I'm happy with my specialty. I think I sort of lucked out. I must admit I had some reservation when I first went in because of what I told you about my class, and also I thought I was more or less being pushed a little bit by my uncle. But it turns out that otolaryngology has been a very rewarding specialty because it's a combination of medicine and surgery, and has a lot of possibilities in it. You can take different roads. For example, when I was doing a lot of surgery, I was busy with surgery. Now I'm doing less surgery, and there's a lot of medical things we can do with hearing loss and dizziness and so forth. So I'm very pleased with the specialty. If you'd asked me like 2 years after I was in practice, I might have said I'd rather take some. But now, looking back, I think the specialty was fine.
Well, the practice of medicine is a very time-demanding profession to begin with.
Yes, you have to have, I have to pay tribute to my wife. You have to have an understanding wife. And I think many marriages break up because the wife is not understanding and wants more time from her husband. When I was early on, when I was covering Children's Hospital before, they had a full-time faculty there. Frequently, I would come home at night for dinner, and the phone would ring, just sit down in the ring. We got a kid in from Oil City or someplace as a foreign body, has to be seen right away, and I'd run back to the hospital. Sometimes I was putting in like 18, 20-hour days, and I'd be called at night, too. I get called at night for a tracheotomy or something like that. Now, as you get older, things change. You don't get them for many reasons. One of them being they have a full-time faculty residence there. They didn't have them then. Things have changed. I'm pleased with the specialty that I chose.
So you don't have to give up your family life and your extracurricular life, so to speak.
You have to make time. That's all. As I say, when I started out, I was running around all the time, and of course I couldn't give as much time to community activities then because I was busy, you know, trying to build up a practice and had a lot more demands on my time.
Not to speak of the time that you had that you might have wanted to devote to your own family.
It's an interesting question. I don't think I shortchanged my family. I have a feeling, now they may have a different view. There's some kids grow up and say that I never saw my father. I don't honestly think my kids can say that. And that goes back to the reason I always wanted a family vacation, because I knew that block of time was always family. It's different now. It's amazing. Now when I go on vacation with Sylvia, I have a computer and I have a fax, and on the telephone all the time. But in those days, I didn't do that. I don't know why. I just didn't do that. We would go to Beach Haven for 2 weeks, and I came back to Pittsburgh. I hear a phone had shot me. I hadn't heard a phone for 2 weeks, you know? So things are different. I try to have time with my family, and I think that at least my perception is I have more or less succeeded.
At least they never complain.
Well, not to me.
In your view, can you contrast the Pittsburgh of yesterday, the Pittsburgh of yesterday with the Pittsburgh today, both politically and culturally, and perhaps Jewishly?
When are you going back to?
You were a young man and capable of making some kind of an analysis of what kind of a city you were living in. Would you rather, for example, be living in New York or Los Angeles?
No, I wouldn't have wanted to. No. To me, and I think I may have mentioned this before, Pittsburgh is the real world, as far as I'm concerned. Any place else I go, Pittsburgh is the standard. I was never very politically active, like some of the other people you may have interviewed, but I have a feeling that maybe we had stronger government leadership in the past than we have now. Now it seems to be sort of almost a comedy. And it seems to me in the days of old, maybe they were party bosses or whatever. It seems to me like we had stronger family city leadership, and I think that maybe that accounted for some of our early renaissances and so forth. So I feel that maybe government now isn't quite as strong as it was then. cleanliness, of course, we all know about. I think it's very marvelously clean now and beautiful. It used to be dirty. I remember growing up, and your cups and collars were always black at the end of the day. Culturally, I think it's wonderful now. And going back to our early marriage, I thought it was always enough there for me then, too. I mean, we always went to Pittsburgh Symphony then, we do now, and I've never been an opera buff, so I don't know much about opera, and I don't like dance that much, but, you know, I've always liked the symphony. Sports-wise, I guess we're as good now as we ever were. You asked me before when I was growing up about sports, and yes, I used to follow the Pirates, used to carry a little book around and keep the Lions score of every game for when I was a kid. What else did you have in mind about the city? I'm not sure.
Your life as a Jew in those days, as opposed to your life today as a Jew. Do you find as a Jewish person that you're more accepted in society?
Well, as I said before, I never felt, strident anti-Semitism then. I certainly don't feel it now. I think what's really changed in my Judaism is my motivation. I think I'm more motivated now to learn about Judaism than I was then. I think that I was so busy raising a family and building a practice that I was really a three-day-a-year Jew, and I think now I feel more motivated. Maybe I feel the time's running out and I have to learn more about it. But I feel more driven now to learn about Judaism than I did. And then I always put on the back burner, I think, well, in due course, I'll learn about it, whatever. But now I feel, as one of my friends said, don't work for your old age, this is it, he said, don't save your money for your old age, this is it. At any rate, that's one difference. As far as commitment to Judaism, I've always felt strongly committed. I think I was as committed then as I am now. I feel I'm more knowledgeable about Judaism than I was then. I guess that about sums it up. In other words, I enjoy, for example, Sylvia and I go every, we're privileged to be invited to an institute at Brandeis. We've gone there like 10 or 12 years in a row, 3 or 4 days in the middle of the summer, and I just love it. We go up there, and you're immersed in Jewish learning with professors from Brandeis and around the country with a separate topic each year. And as a matter of fact, that's what motivated me when I was president of the congregation, I don't know if you were on the board then, to have the retreat. We had a couple of retreats at Ogilvy Park, and I just wanted to make sure that, I thought that would be a good experience to have our rabbis. And I remember one of them, when Mark brought the Torah down and went over the service with him, yeah. He was there that morning. I thought that was wonderful. I'm sort of sorry the board doesn't do it now. With all due respect to HUC, I don't think it's the same as taking it to HUC to have a show-and-tell program, I think we can just cloister ourselves and get away from daily life so that I feel strong.
So the hands-on experience might have been more...
I think it's more now than it was then, yes. Although, when I was growing up, don't forget, I was in the choir at B'nai Israel, and I remember singing Ben Hayra and all those Hebrew songs, I sort of missed that. But that's, I guess, maybe one of the differences between a conservative and reformed congregation. I don't know. I would like to see a temple, just to go as an aside, to be more traditional. And I know there are those who disagree with me. We went out to dinner with people who are appalled about the rabbis wearing tallis. I don't know how you feel about it, but I like the tradition.
We've pretty well covered your past experiences, and it's been a privilege, of course, to listen to you. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to this historical perspective that we've gone through so well?
Well, I think it's a worthwhile project, and I think you two are to be congratulated for doing it so well, for dedicating yourselves and your time to this. I know you both dedicate yourselves to Jewish causes, and that doesn't go unnoticed either.
Well, I thank you, Dr. Busis, and on behalf of the National Council of Jewish Women, let me say that it's been an excellent and certainly a satisfying experience to talk to you. We certainly know more about you than we ever thought that we would, and it's been a privilege all the way. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.